in your lifetime, you'll be presented once, maybe twice, with, and I hate to be cliche here, but a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. An opportunity that will be put in front of you and more than likely will never happen again. And you'll be faced with the choice to either take advantage and seize the opportunity or run in fear. Most people run in fear. It could be anything. It could be a new job offer across the country that you don't take because you don't want to leave your hometown. 30 years later, you end up regretting it. Eminem said it best in Lose Yourself, "You only get one shot, do not miss your chance." And it's true. Sunday afternoon, Ryan Tannehill was presented with a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Something that likely will never happen again in his NFL career. A chance to play in the Super Bowl. And he failed miserably. If you look at his stat line, you'd think Tannehill played a pretty good game. 21 of 31, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. Not a bad stat line. It wasn't that he was bad. It's just he wasn't great. And to get to the Super Bowl, you've got to be great. Just good isn't good enough. Derrick Henry carried the Tennessee Titans almost single-handedly through the first two rounds of the playoffs. They needed Ryan Tannehill to carry this team for one game because you knew Kansas City had the ability to put up points in a hurry. When I previewed this game on Saturday, I told you that this game would be all about Ryan Tannehill. Mike Vrabel knew the Titans had to be able to throw the football to keep the Chiefs' defense honest and to keep up with Kansas City offensively. Vrabel's game plan looked great in the first 15, 20 minutes of gameplay. Nice balance of run and pass. Defensively, they were getting pressure on Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs' first couple of drives went absolutely nowhere. The Titans were forcing Mahomes out of the pocket, and they were containing him. Much like the last two games, Tennessee built an early lead. At that point, I think it's close to being over. Tennessee's up 17-7. This team is built to play with a lead. Haven't given up a lead the entire playoffs. Then, inexplicably, the defensive scheme changes completely. Instead of bringing pressure on Patrick Mahomes, they start rushing just three guys, dropping eight back into coverage. What the fuck? I understand the idea behind it. You don't want Mahomes to burn you with the deep ball. Instead, you got burned anyway. He had a long run to close the first half that gave Kansas City a lead that they never relinquished. The rest of the game, Patrick Mahomes sat in the pocket for the most part and decimated this Titans secondary. Mike Vrabel fell into the trap of coaching not to lose instead of coaching to win. The same trap that Sean McDermott in Buffalo fell into in the wild card round against the Texans. This was Ryan Tannehill's game to win. It was his time to shine, his opportunity, because make no mistake about it, it's highly unlikely he will ever be in this position again. It's hard for elite quarterbacks to make it to the Super Bowl. Drew Brees is one of the best to ever play at the position, been to one Super Bowl. I talk all the time about elite level quarterbacks and your mid-tier guys. The AFC Championship game Sunday between the Chiefs and the Titans was a prime example of the difference between the two. Patrick Mahomes is an elite quarterback, top five in the NFL. He can put the Chiefs on his shoulders and carry the team if it's needed. Guys like Ryan Tannehill can't do it. You see what happened when Derrick Henry was contained. The Tennessee offense completely fell apart. The worst possible scenario happened for the Titans. Mahomes got hot, and Kansas City built a double-digit lead. Tennessee doesn't have the quarterback to overcome that kind of a deficit, especially on the road. The Titans were a nice story coming into this game. They were playing with house money. But the dream is over. And it's highly unlikely, like I keep saying, that a guy like Ryan Tannehill will ever be in this position again. One reason I say that is because I don't think that we're going to see Derrick Henry have the type of season that he had this year ever again. He is a bruiser type of running back, very physical. There's only so many hits that your body can take. He reminds me of DeMarco Murray. You remember DeMarco Murray? Had a breakout season for the Cowboys back in 2014. Had almost 400 attempts and over 1,800 yards that season. It was a contract year for him. And Jerry Jones let him walk in free agency. It was a controversial decision at the time. A lot of people were pissed off about it. They ran DeMarco Murray through the ground that year, and then Jerry Jones refused to pay him. What a lot of people felt was money that he was owed for the type of season that he had. But Jerry Jones was right. DeMarco Murray was never the same running back after that 2014 season. 3 years later, he's out of the league. Guys like Adrian Peterson are rare. You don't see 34-year-old running backs in this league. But even AP has tailed off, understandably so. If Derrick Henry isn't the Derrick Henry that we saw this season, then the Tennessee Titans, as they're currently constructed, don't stand a chance. Now, I got to take a second to give credit to Andy Reid. Both playoff games, the Chiefs were down big early. Down 24 to the Texans. Down 10 Sunday to the Chiefs. Andy Reid didn't panic. Kept his team composed. All the pressure was on the Chiefs yesterday. Andy Reid kept his team composed. Rubbed off a little bit of that stigma of him not being able to win the big game. And for the first time in 50 years, the Kansas City Chiefs are headed to the Super Bowl. Behind the Line, episode 43, I'm your host, KC. You can follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube. Leave me a 5-star rating on iTunes. I appreciate all the support. I'm on Twitter last night while I'm watching the NFC Championship game. And I see all of these national pundits dumping all over the Green Bay Packers. The Packers don't belong in this game. This team is overrated. Well, no fucking shit. If you've been listening to this podcast, then you already know this. This is not news to you. All season long, I've been telling you, do not buy into the Green Bay Packers. End of the season, I said, this is the worst 13-3 team in the league. I'll take it a step further. This is the worst 13-3 team in the history of the NFL. This game was an embarrassment. This Packers team outcoached, outplayed, outclassed, really. I thought they'd at least keep it interesting. This game was over with by the second quarter. Aaron Rodgers had a great game statistically, save for the turnovers. But like I always say, stats can be misleading. This Packers team, with Aaron Rodgers leading the charge, has been bragging all season about how they win ugly. That translates to, we've been getting lucky. Things have been going our way. You can't make it through the playoffs winning like that. Because eventually, you run into a team like San Francisco who punches you in the mouth, things don't go your way, and you get embarrassed in front of the world. And Aaron Rodgers knows. Aaron Rodgers knew that this Packers team was outmatched. In the post-game press conference yesterday, he was not what I would call disappointed. He was actually looking forward to next season. He knew Green Bay didn't have a fucking chance. The problem in Green Bay is Aaron Rodgers' massive contract. His contract ate up 16% of the Packers' salary cap this season. What was the problem all year in Green Bay? Not enough weapons offensively. Why do they not have guys like Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb anymore? Because they got to pay Aaron Rodgers. But KC, 16% isn't that big of a number. They still got $158 million to pay other players. Well, when you've got 51 other players to be paid, that doesn't leave a lot of money left over. Averages out to about $3 million per player. It's a big deal. It's why the number two receiver in Green Bay is Alan Lazard, a guy who would be the number four receiver on any other team in this league. That's why you see guys like Tom Brady and Drew Brees taking less money later on in their careers. The window is closing on Aaron Rodgers to win a Super Bowl. He isn't the same quarterback he was 5 years ago. The Packers' offense was as mundane this season as it was in 2018 when they finished 6-9-1. Actually, it was worse. 18th in yards, 17th in passing. They couldn't do anything against the 49ers defense until San Francisco was up 27-0 and they started going into prevent. I know Green Bay mounted a little comeback. This game was never in doubt. The best two teams are in the Super Bowl. That's how it usually happens in the NFL. Chiefs opened up as 1.5-point favorites. Seems about right to me. As great as the defense is in San Francisco, the one thing they've struggled with all season is defending against mobile quarterbacks. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, all were able to neutralize the 49ers' pass rush. I think Patrick Mahomes will be able to do the same thing. Andy Reid is a brilliant coach when given time to prepare. 18-3 after a bye week. Now he's got 2 weeks to formulate this offense. 2 weeks to figure out how he's going to attack the San Francisco defense. I'm sure there will be a trick play or two. But he's got the perfect quarterback to go up against this 49ers pass rush. I feel like this is Andy Reid's year to finally get that Super Bowl title that's eluded him in his 20 years as a head coach. I was sent an incredible stat last night by one of my friends that I thought was real interesting. With the Chiefs making it to the Super Bowl, this will be the 17th straight year that a player from the University of Alabama will be playing in the Super Bowl. That's got to be some kind of record. That predates Nick Saban's time in Tuscaloosa, and it speaks to the excellence of that program. I might bash Alabama during the college football season and give them a hard time for playing a weak schedule. But you can't take away from the fact that they churn out NFL players better than any other program in the country. They just don't produce quarterbacks. But when you think about it, what SEC school really does? When's the last time a Pro Bowl or All-Pro quarterback came from an SEC program? Tim Tebow was a bust. Jamarcus Russell was an embarrassment to the game. You know, I heard an interesting story about Jamarcus Russell years ago. I believe it was his second season in Oakland with the Raiders. He's the starter at this point. They're leaving for the bye week, and one of the coaches gives him a DVD of who they're playing the following week. Ask him to take a look over it during the bye week. Give his input when he gets back. Which plays they should run against them, stuff like that. Anyway, they come back after the bye week, and the coach asked Jamarcus Russell his opinion. Jamarcus Russell's like, oh, you know, we should attack them deep. I saw a weakness here, saw a soft spot in the zone there, blah, blah, blah. Coach looks at him, tells him the DVD was blank. Jamarcus Russell never watched it. Needless to say, he was cut and never played again. Moving on to the NBA, I don't want to hear any more about the Houston Rockets being a title contender in the Western Conference. And it's not because they've lost their last three games by an average of 10 points. It's not because they've lost four of their last five games. It's not because they have a negative net rating since January 1st. It's because this is the same type of team, same offensive system, same Mike D'Antoni system that they've tried since 2016, and it just doesn't work. The Rockets lost at home Saturday night to a Lakers team playing without Anthony Davis. To add insult to injury, those diehard loyal fans in Houston were giving LeBron James MVP chance. How embarrassing. An opposing player on your home floor is getting MVP chance. Says a lot about the city of Houston. You think something like that would happen in Boston when Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and those guys were there? I guarantee you it never happened in Boston today. It wouldn't happen at the Staples Center when the Lakers are playing. Russell Westbrook was completely shut down in the second half by Kyle fucking Kuzma, a guy that's not exactly known for his defensive prowess. The second best player on your team was shut down offensively by a guy on the Lakers' second unit. Kuzma was starting in place of Anthony Davis Saturday night. Normally, he's coming off the bench. I've never been a Russell Westbrook guy. That's not to say I don't think he's extremely talented, because he is. But his style of basketball just doesn't work in the modern NBA. He would have fit in great in the Jordan era. But in this era of three-point shooting, where your center is expected to shoot 30-35% from beyond the arc, Russell Westbrook's a fish out of water. What we've seen the past couple of weeks is how the Rockets will be defended in a seven-game series. Teams are trapping James Harden because they know that Westbrook isn't a threat without the ball and damn sure isn't a threat from deep. James Harden is shooting 34% from the field, 27% from three, past 2 weeks. The Rockets are actually worse this year than last year. At least with Chris Paul, you had two guards who could burn you deep in the paint, and Chris Paul is one hell of a defender. If the playoffs were to begin today, Houston would be matched up against the Denver Nuggets in the first round, assuming that Jamal Murray would be healthy. That series would be over in five games. The Rockets don't stand a fucking chance. I don't want to say that Mike D'Antoni has lost this locker room, because I don't think that's necessarily the case. This Rockets team is in a funk right now, which happens at points in the regular season. But the fact is, everyone knows this is Mike D'Antoni's last season in Houston. They've tried multiple times since last summer to hammer out an extension. Neither side can agree to terms. Unless the Rockets win a championship this year, which is not happening, D'Antoni's gone. And don't think for a second that that doesn't have an impact on the players in that locker room. If you knew your boss's days were numbered at your job, would anything that he says to you carry the same weight as it did when he was backed by management or by ownership? Of course it wouldn't. No different in the NBA or the NFL. Houston ranks 23rd in second chance points allowed, 29th in fast break points allowed. You know what that tells me? There's a lack of effort on this team. Those two stats are reflective of effort plays. Mike D'Antoni's run the same offensive system for two decades. He's the only one that doesn't realize that it doesn't work. Oh, it's a great system for the regular season. That's why he's number four on the list of winningest head coaches. 643 career wins. Only three coaches are ahead of him. Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers, Rick Carlisle. All three of those guys have rings. D'Antoni's system, it just isn't effective in the playoffs. It's not. In his 20-year coaching career, he's never been to an NBA Finals. At 68 years old, not likely to ever happen. Damn sure it's not happening this year with this Houston Rockets team. I think this is Mike D'Antoni's final year as a head coach in the NBA. And I know right now, everyone, myself included, lately, has been critical of the NBA because of the huge decline in ratings. I think now that the NFL is over, pretty much, we're about to see a rebound in the NBA ratings. I watch every Pelicans game I can because I'm a diehard fan. But now that my focus has shifted away from football, I'm watching more NBA games. And I think we're in store for an exciting second half of the NBA regular season. The NBA is in great shape. Think about this for a second. When is the last time we've had this many young superstar players in the league at 28 or under? Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns, Nikola Jokic, Ben Simmons, Trae Young, Ja Morant, Giannis, Luka Doncic, Kawhi Leonard. And the biggest star of them all hasn't even played his first game yet. Zion Williamson's playing his first game tomorrow night against the Spurs. should be a huge rating for ESPN. I'd estimate 5 to 8 million people will tune in to see Zion's first game. The league is as balanced as it's ever been in recent memory. The Lakers are back. Boston's good. Philly. Only major market they're missing is New York, which should be back next season when Kevin Durant returns in Brooklyn. Forget about the Knicks. Everyone's given up on them. But we've got a lot of small market teams that are relevant. Oklahoma City. Everybody wrote them off after Russell Westbrook left. They're surprisingly good this year. Denver, Utah, Miami. The league is fucking balanced. New Orleans is poised to make a late season push for the playoffs with Zion Williamson coming back. I think we're going to see the ratings for the league turn around this last half of the season. One final thing I want to touch on before I get out of here. When you watch the NFL or the NBA, or if you're a baseball fan, Major League Baseball, the primary reason you tune in to watch is for the game. But one of the most important factors in the presentation of the game is the broadcast team. A great broadcasting duo can enhance the game. For example, as a kid, when I heard the voices of Pat Summerall and John Madden, the greatest duo ever in broadcasting, I knew the NFL game coming on was important. Right now, the best broadcast team in sports is Jim Nantz and Tony Romo at CBS. And it's not even close. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck are okay, but no one right now can touch Nantz and Romo. Tony Romo's contract with CBS is up, and it's being reported that ESPN wants to offer him $10 to $14 million a year to join their Monday Night Football team. Right now, Romo was making about $4 million a year at CBS. A move to ESPN would be a monumental mistake for Tony Romo for a myriad of reasons. First off, Monday Night Football isn't the marquee game anymore. 15, 20 years ago, Monday Night Football was a big deal. That's no longer the case. Most of the time, it sucks. It's the leftover game. Who gets excited about watching the Jets and the Bungles? Sure, they'll have a good game sometimes. Packers, Vikings, toward the end of last season. But for the most part, Monday Night Football isn't the biggest game of the week in the NFL. Whereas right now at CBS, every week, Tony Romo is calling one of the biggest games of the week. Secondly, he's got a great thing going with Jim Nantz, and that's something that can't be replicated. It's tough to build that type of chemistry. Really, I don't think it can be built. It's something that just happens organically. They've been great together since day one. You find a duo like that that works, you hold on to it. Moving to ESPN, Tony Romo would go from calling games with Jim Nantz to calling games with Joe Tessitore and Booger fucking McFarland. Need I say more? Booger McFarland is a joke. He's an embarrassment. I can see it now. Tony Romo is breaking down a brilliant offensive play called by Andy Reid, perfectly executed by Patrick Mahomes. And in the middle of his analysis, Booger McFarland interrupts with some of his legendary commentary like, "Playmakers gotta make plays, Tony. These wide receivers are divas for running to the locker room to use the bathroom. Back in my day, we took our pisses on the sideline." Romo doesn't come off as a guy to me who makes decisions based off of money. He's acknowledged the fact that he loves his crew at CBS and is happy working with Jim Nantz. Who wouldn't be? I really hope he makes the right decision and re-signs with CBS. He might not have had a Hall of Fame career as a player, but he's well on his way of making it into the NFL Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. All right, that's all for today, guys. Hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube. Leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. I appreciate your support. I'll see you later on this week.